Welcome to PCMC. I'm Mike Bongiorno. I'm joined today by the one and only Vin Forte.
Oh, my God.
Vin, you might know not just from this illustrious podcast, but also from Wrestle Rap.
Yeah.
And Oddball.
Yeah.
What's going on with Oddball?
Just a lot of, if you're into sports, which I don't know how big the overlap is.
The Venn diagram between PCMC listeners and sports fans. Yeah. It's like a boob. It's just one-to-one.
Though admittedly, it is like sports slash, like I've been incorporating a lot of like video game stuff.
I mean,
like
it's still Vin Forte doing sports.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? It's you.
It's not, yeah, you're not getting like Dick Vitale or someone.
Right. Well, you know, like the you know The Ringer?
Yes.
The Ringer people do sports too. I feel like there is, you know, it's these goddamn millennials. There is this like nerd sports thing, like the whole like idea of like the jock and the blah, that seems to be, I mean, still it's always going to be there every Sunday.
Yeah.
But there's this other fandom, basically, another way to put it is fandom as incorporated sports now in a way that I think is more accessible to the nerd.
Oh yeah, absolutely.
The nerd.
It's a lot more, it's a lot more of your rollerballs and your death races. And
right. A lot more of like, you know, making references like, you see, he had the high ground, much like Obi-Wan Kenobi. Well, Vin, it's been one hell of a year.
It
2020
has.
Was a crazy year, but we got through it. And now we're going to go into 2021.
Uh-oh, what's going on?
Oh, wait, it's actually 2022 we're going into.
Oh.
Holy shit, it's been 2 years of a global pandemic.
Who would have thought?
Who?
I feel like that Paul Rudd, like, look at us.
Look at us. I mean, if I could only go back in time and laugh at myself, the stooge who left his mug in the office and said, "We'll be back in 2 weeks. Don't worry."
Well, remember, two weeks to flatten the curve.
Right, exactly. And that mug, I have gone back to the office and I've seen the mug and I'm like, I don't know what roaches have been living in there for a year.
Yeah, you threw that mug away.
That mug is just, no, I just left it. It's just, it's someone else's home now.
It's like Chernobyl or something. Like people just left everything behind.
Yeah, yeah. Ugh, boy. But getting to my point, it's New Year's. Happy New Year's,
yeah,
man.
Yeah, Happy New Year's.
New Year's is such an exciting time. It's a time for beginnings. And if you're a New York kid or an East Coast kid.
Oh, it's time for the topic du jour of today, the Honeymooners Marathon on WPIX.
Oh, close. I'm talking about the Twilight Zone Marathon, which, what was it, WPIX?
No, there was the Sci-Fi Channel.
Well, Sci-Fi, I remember it being a local thing when I was younger.
It probably was,
I'm older
too.
Than you.
Yeah.
It was. I remember being a local thing when I was younger because, you know, a lot of marathons start off because they're fucking cheap. Like, simply with Honeymooners. Like, this
right.
Shit's cheap and abundant. Here you go. But Twilight Zone, yeah. So, maybe not PIX, you're right. But Twilight Zone was some local station here in New York. And probably local all over the country. And then, I think when that ended, Sci-Fi was like, we'll pick it up. We'll do
yeah.
it. And it's been a Sci-Fi thing for, is it still on Sci-Fi?
I think so.
It still exists.
It's a weird thing because now, like, you'll get certain streaming services who will pick stuff up.
Yeah.
And they'll be like, why don't you watch this? They'll just suggest that you watch it.
Yeah, like, come on. Do your own, thing.
Program your own television station.
Yeah, exactly. Well, this is our second time we've done this. This is a newish tradition for us. Last year, me and Vin got together and we talked about some Twilight Zone episodes. We compared an episode of the original Twilight Zone to an episode of the 1985 Twilight Zone. It was an episode that they remade, so we kind of got to see it from two different angles. If you're interested, go back and check it out. And today we're doing it again, because if you're a fan of the Twilight Zone or the Twilight Zone New Year's Marathon, we said this last year, we'll say it again next year, there is something pleasant or intellectually stimulating. I can't think of the right way to put it. There is something good about beginning a year and ending a year with the existential weirdness of the Twilight Zone. Like, oh, a whole year's passed and you're about to enter a new year. Yeah. What's going to happen? How about you think about life in a very bleak way?
Oh, yeah. Like, how about, you know, there's really aliens out there and they're your neighbors? Or, you know, hey, what if you you had this stopwatch that could freeze time?
Right. Right. Exactly.
Would you be a creep? I bet you'd be a creep.
Like, you probably would be a creep.
Yeah.
Yeah, fuck.
All you listening to this right now, you creeps.
This year's episodes, or this, what we're focused on this year is, a very famous episode, actually. Maybe top three?
Yeah.
I'd say maybe top three with, like, Eye of the Beholder.
Oh, yeah.
And,
they put it in the movie, so.
Right, exactly. So, what we're gonna talk about today, actually we're gonna talk about a lot today, but the main text of today is from the original Twilight Zone series, season 3, episode 8, It's a Good Life. Teleplay by Rod Serling, based on a story by Jeremy Bixby, starring Bill Mumy.
Yeah.
Or Mummy, I don't know how to say it. He was Will Robinson in the original Lost in Space.
He was.
And Cloris Leachman, a young Cloris Leachman.
Yeah. And almost unrecognizable, because we think of Cloris, because even 10 years later, with young Frankenstein, like, she looks vastly different.
I know. And she's also doing a serious, you know, we think of her as so funny. But she did serious stuff, too.
Oh, yeah. It's like the first time you see Leslie Nielsen in, like, a 50s drama.
Yeah. You know, before we jump into today, I want to give you guys a refresher course on Twilight Zone history. So there have been 1, 2, 3, 4 Twilight Zone series. Wow, they keep trying it, huh?
Yep.
The original Twilight Zone premiered in 1959. It had 5 seasons and racked up 156 episodes. In 1983, Twilight Zone the movie was made. This movie remade. I don't think is there any original stories in that, or is it all remade?
I think it's all remade.
Right.
Is the Kicked Can story original? Or?
Oh, I don't know. I'm not sure.
That's the worst part of that movie.
Is that the Spielberg one?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Because the one where the old people and like the one of them kicks a can and they all start kicking a can
and they all
outside,
turn young.
They
it's
all
basically
turn young.
Cocoon.
Yeah, it's Cocoon, but like with nothing to it. Like,
because it's Spielberg-y.
Yeah, exactly. It's like, do you want the essence of Spielberg without any, like, actual plot? Or...
Right, right. It's kind of like in Twilight Zone, like, every 20th episode would be one that wasn't sort of scary or dreadful. Just kind of like the one where Art Carney becomes Santa Claus. Like, it was kind of like, you bring in Spielberg for that. Yeah, but so that's basically what the movie was. You brought in big directors at the time to do sort of little remakes of episodes, and it was kind of an anthology. In 1985, the second series happened. This ran for 3 seasons, but only had 65 episodes. In 2002, we tried it again. It had 1 season, and that went for 43 episodes. And then, just recently in 2019, CBS All Access, which is now Paramount Plus, did 2 seasons of 10 episodes each. And those were hour long, or like TV hour, like 45 plus.
Yeah.
Whereas every other version was 22 minutes, right?
Yeah,
or
all
was
the other ones were a half
hour. Wait, did the 80s do an hour, one story, then another?
I think they did one story and another.
Okay. So the original host was Rod Serling. He was a creator and he was a narrator. The movie has as its narrator Burgess Meredith, who you might know from Rocky. Is he played Mickey. He was also the original Penguin. He also was in a very famous episode of Twilight Zone. So they, like, Rod Serling was dead, so they were like, oh, you've got a good voice. You know, you could be the link here. 83, I think, didn't have a narrator, right? I think it just sort of went.
I think it had a narrator.
Oh, did it? Is it like Robert Stack or somebody? You know what? Now that you've questioned me, I feel like I probably looked this up recently and I was like, who the hell is that? Robin Ward. Don't know who that is. Robin Ward was our narrator. Okay. In 2002, Forrest Whitaker was our narrator.
Yeah, you know who did the theme song?
Korn?
Yeah. And Jerry Garcia did the one in the 80s.
Is that true? Or are you just fucking with me?
No, that's true.
Really?
That's absolutely true.
Wow. I can't right now recall what the one in the 80s is.
They're
all riffs on the original.
Yeah, they're all riffs on the same thing.
The original is sort of iconic. It's become the meme of like something being weird. Like, da-na-na-na, something's weird.
Yeah.
And then 2019, the narrator was once comedian, now horror film auteur,
Jordan Peele.
And he's sort of the mind behind the new Twilight Zone. Now, they did two seasons. I haven't heard of an official cancellation. I know COVID happened. So I don't know if this is going to happen more or not or what.
I don't know. I feel like they canceled it.
I've only seen two episodes. I saw the very first episode and I saw an episode for today because there's an episode in season two that's sort of slightly an homage to what we're going to talk about today.
Kinda.
And that episode was better than the pilot, but neither was very good.
No, I hated this episode.
All right. We'll get to that.
Yeah.
So our two main big texts are going to be It's a Good Life from the original Twilight Zone series, and then from the 2002 Twilight Zone series, season 1, episode 30, It's Still a Good Life. And this is a sequel to the original show, even bringing back Cloris Leachman.
Yeah.
2002. So it's way, way later. And
they brought back Cloris Leachman. They got Bill Mumy.
And
his
real-life daughter to play the character's daughter.
Yeah.
And then we'll talk a little bit about the It's a Good Life segment from the Twilight Zone movie, which was directed by Joe Dante, the director of Gremlins. He did some weird shit with it. I don't know if I like it.
It was very, like...
He changed it a lot.
He changed it a lot, but he also added a lot of, like, scary claymation. It was very Joe Dante.
He did a weird thing where he tried to make it like the kid wasn't the bad guy, the adults were. Because he made the adults all like creepy.
Yeah.
And it's like, well, why?
They made it seem like the kid was rebelling against the adults.
Right, right.
And so that he was right. Like, oh, you shouldn't mess around with kids because then they'll get you.
Right, yeah. It was weird. And then I guess the last thing we'll talk about a little bit, Vin hated it, was from the 2019 Twilight Zone, season 1, episode 5, Wunderkind. This is a glance towards It's a Good Life. People compare them. It's sort of, in some ways, it homages, especially the second half. It's about a kid who like goes viral and then runs for president and wins. And then the second half, when he is president, that was when I was like, okay, this feels like It's a Good Life.
Well, I feel like
it's also a huge Trump. It's a huge, huge, obvious Trump. Like, fuck you.
Very obvious.
Like, super heavy handed. Like, get it, Trump.
Yeah, get it. Look at this kid. He's ordering ice cream and Diet Coke. And
Right. But what blew my mind about it, though, is that it happened before the second election when he lost and said he won. And it seems like it predicts that because in the end, the kid like loses a putt-putt game. And he's like, I won that game a putt-putt.
Yeah.
And the guy's like, no, you didn't. And he's like, that's treason. I won that game a putt-putt. And I was like, this is a big lie before it even happened. Although everyone predicted that's what he would do.
Yeah.
All right. So let's get to the important text. It's a Good Life from the original Twilight Zone. It begins with, you've got Rod Serling in front of a map. And he's like, today's story is a bit of a weird one, which is funny. And then he's like, so this is Peaksville. And Peaksville is this little village. And quite recently, it became the only place that exists because everything around it in all of existence blinked out of existence.
He really frames this episode as, like, it comes back around in the wraparound where he's like, oh, yeah, there's no moral of this.
Yeah,
like,
yeah.
It's just a weird thing that's happening. I wanted you to know about.
See, I don't know if I buy that. I'm going to get into that with you because both these episodes do that. And it's like, was there no moral? It's in some ways, you know, this is a very famous episode. You might know it from the Simpsons Treehouse of Horror parody where they do it with Bart.
Oh, yeah.
But it's the kind of thing where the more you think about it, the more insane the whole thing is. If you don't know the story, it's about a little boy. And actually, they set it up perfectly because he keeps being like, there's a monster who lives here. And this monster has made everyone's life. Monster can blink things out of existence. And let me introduce you to the monster. And it's like a cute little boy. And he's like, here's the fucking monster. And you're like, okay, here we go. Great premise.
Yeah.
And it's this little boy who has magical mind powers where he can't fly or anything. I don't think.
But he can, like, summon his own TV shows.
Right.
And
he can
send you to a cornfield.
Right. He can create like a three-headed squirrel.
Yeah.
And everyone's like, oh, God. And he could, like, set people on fire and break things. And he could actually, I don't know, he probably could fly if he wanted to. He turned somebody into a jack-in-the-box.
Yeah. So, I like that that's, like, the final straw.
I know.
Like, that's gone too far.
I know. He's wild. We sort of enter the story right in the middle of it, where it's his little kid living on a farmhouse with his mother and father and their aunt. And their little village is the only place that exists anymore because he didn't like the rest of the world, so he blinked it out of existence. And he didn't like electricity for some reason, so there's no electricity. And, like, you know, you hear all the, there's this backstory where, like, he's talking to his dad, and he's like, no kids come to play with me. And his dad's like, well, remember what happened the last time the kids came over? You got upset and you sent them into the cornfield. Yeah. And the kid's like, you just immediately hate the fucking kid because the kid's like, they thought bad. Oh, he could read minds too.
Yeah.
He's like, they thought bad thoughts about me, so I made them disappear. And everyone's like, that's very good that you did that, Anthony.
Yeah.
Oh, that's a swell day, Anthony. In the beginning, his aunt, who he's like scrambling, he's giving her the brain scrambies.
Yeah.
She's still like alive, but she's less cognizant. And he's like, everyone's like, it's a lovely day, isn't it, Anthony? And the aunt's like, ah, oh, it's hot today. And they're like, oh, what are you talking about? It's a beautiful day.
Yeah, they're setting up that, like, no, I don't think like that. Don't do that.
Anthony can hear our thoughts.
Yeah.
You know, there's such, this is not just this episode, but all Twilight Zone. There's such economy in the way that these things are written and made. Because it's 22 minutes, but you get right away everything. You have the scenes with the mother and father talking where Anthony's not there. You've got the milkman coming in. And
well, because there's no bullshit. There's no, like I've often said that, like, what kills a lot of premises is the idea that you actually need to explain it.
Right.
And it's like, this is a classic story.
Right.
And we never, not in this episode, in the sequel, nor in any backstory or, like, making of, do we find out why this kid has these powers.
Right.
He's got them, and what do you do?
Right. And any exposition is just bringing you up to speed as to how we got to this moment.
Yeah.
But even that, it's all very well done because little by little you hear things, and you begin to get a view of this world. What's really, I think, amazing about all the performances of everyone except the little kid is no one says what they mean because he can read their minds and they sort of always have to be playing like they're happy. So it's, you have to watch the actor's eyes to see what it is they're trying to really express. It's this amazing game. There's a scene without little Anthony there, and it's the milkman talking to the mom, and the milkman's like, I brought some soup. I know he likes soup. Make sure Anthony knows I brought him some soup.
Yeah, like make sure I get in his good graces.
Right. And then the mom's like, yeah, yesterday he was outside, and he made like a three-headed dog with a big vicious teeth, and I kind of hoped. And then she doesn't say anything, and then they exchange a knowing glance.
Yeah, just like, yeah.
And you know she means, I hope the fucking thing would eat him and kill him, and then we'd be out of this fucking nightmare.
Yeah.
And then but no one says that. They just say it with their eyes. And then the milkman's like, I gotta get out of here, because he doesn't want to think bad things.
No.
Because everyone's fucking terrified. You know, it's a hostage situation.
It really is. It's really like a 22-minute hostage situation.
Right. And it's so nerve-wracking, because you see everyone sweating. You see the pain in their eyes. You know, you see the adults around him just
it's really just like two acts too, really, because they've got the setup, and then very quickly we get to like the birthday party.
Right. And the setup is like what? The mother with the milkman, then Anthony with the dad.
Yeah.
And then I think the dad and mom talking, and then the rest is the party, which is, it's both a surprise party for their neighbor, but also it's TV night. And Anthony creates his own TV, which is funny. It's just dinosaurs fighting each other. And everyone
it's
has
what
to
a kid would right. put on. It's just dinosaurs fighting each other.
Right. And everyone just has to sit and watch and be like, oh, this is great, Anthony. This is so much better than what used to be on TV.
Yeah.
And it's Dan Hollis, their neighbor's birthday. And Dan Hollis is played by this actor, Don Kiefer.
And this he's guy, just sick of this shit.
Right,
he's
and
fucking
he's drinking,
done with it.
You see him drinking, and you know. The audience member like, oh, fuck, this is not the thing. Because you can see he's psyching himself up. And at one point when he's drinking, behind Anthony's back, Cloris Leachman like points to him, like to his wife, like, fucking stop this.
Yeah.
He's gonna fuck up. And he's just like, I'm just drinking my birthday present. What's the big deal? I'm just having some whiskey.
Who's the idiot that brought alcohol to this thing?
I know. Well, what about his idiot wife who got him a Perry Como? Oh,
yeah. I got you this Perry Como album.
Yeah, because another thing Anthony doesn't like is singing.
Yeah.
So he gets a Perry Como album, and he's like, oh, I haven't heard new music in years. Can we play it? Can we play it? And everyone's like, not a good idea. And he's like, what if we just play the beginning before the singing? And the dad's like, ah, well, we don't really know when the singing is going to start, so that's a pretty bad idea. And then this other friend of theirs is like, they're like, play the piano, but don't sing. So he plays the piano, and he's like sweating bullets because everyone's afraid to fuck up in some way. And then at one point, it's pretty tense. At one point, the neighbor who's drinking, he's getting drunk. He's starting to like trip over shit, and like he drops a glass, and everyone's like, shit. And then the little Anthony's like, no noise when the music is on. And then
so Dan's like,
it's a real funny, like, fuck.
But it's
you.
Also this weird conundrum where, like, now it's like the rules don't matter because it's like, no music, but we're going to play a little music.
Right.
And then don't interrupt me when the music's on.
Right. It is a hostage situation, but it's a hostage situation where you can't even act like you're sad. You've got to always be like, this is great. It's great that we live in this nightmare where a child's whims are what we live by. And we don't have electricity because it annoyed him or whatever.
We don't have electricity.
I know. That makes way more sense in the original episode than the second one. Yeah. I've got a lot of problems with the second one. We'll get into it. There's good things and bad things about that second one.
There's good, yeah.
So Dan Hollis is getting drunk. He's sort of psyching himself up, and then he's just like talking to himself. He's like, I can't even play a fucking record on my birthday. Blah, blah, blah. And then they're like, hey, Dan, why don't you calm the fuck down? And then he's like, he finally says it on his mind.
Mm-hmm.
Right. Which is the moment you've been waiting for as the audience, right? You're like, somebody's going to fucking say something to this kid. And he's like, he points out Cloris Leachman and her husband. He's like, you fucking had him. You did this.
You could have stopped this anytime you wanted.
Yeah. Like. And then Bill Mumy is looking at him, and you hear like this like twinkly music when he's about to do something magical with his mind.
And it's like that's playing while Dan's fucking going off.
Right.
Like,
and Dan actually has the right idea here. He's like, go ahead, think about me. And why are you thinking about me? Somebody else fucking sneak up behind him and hit him. He's basically sacrificing himself.
Yeah.
He's like, somebody fucking end this right now. And what's great is I've watched this twice this week. If you look at the dad. The dad really thinks about it. The dad kind of almost takes a step like, fuck, this is it. and everyone's like, oh, shit, are we going to do it? And then no one does it. And then he's like, you're a bad, bad man. You think bad thoughts. And he turns him into a jack-in-the-box. And everyone's like, oh, God, wish it away. One thing that is left specifically vague on purpose is what he means when he says, I'm going to wish you into the cornfield. Is that literal? Is that heaven? Is that you don't exist anymore? Why does he call it the cornfield?
My interpretation of it was that he sends you into a cornfield that exists somewhere.
Okay.
And you're just, that's it. You're not making it out of the cornfield.
Right. It's
like
right.
You don't know where you are. There's no food. Like.
Right. Exactly. Okay. It is pretty, it's kind of vague. Which I think is not a, I think that is a plus, not a minus. It's interesting that they have this idea of the cornfield. And because it's also great. Let me just tell you that, you know, the little kid Anthony's Bill Mumy, Mrs. Freeman, his mother's Cloris Leachman, Mr. Freeman, the dad is John Lark. Neighbor Dan Hollis is played by Don Kiefer. And Aunt Amy, the one with the scramby brains, she's played by Alice Frost. There's so much texture in the show, too. Like, if you watch, you'll see, like, on the wall, there's clean spots where there were pictures. So it's like Anthony
like he didn't like those pictures.
Right. If you could sort of look around their weird world and kind of guess other things that have happened, it's really dense.
Yeah, well, that's where we could probably touch on the movie segment a bit.
Sure.
Because whereas in the original episode, those things are, like, just in the background. Joe Dante looked at that and said, all those things in the background, we need to amplify them.
Yeah.
If it's black, like make it colorful, make it this, make it that.
Right.
Like really make it all stand out.
Right. And Joe Dante is famously a Looney Tunes like super fan.
He Looney Tuned it up in this one.
Right. He makes the kid obsessed with cartoons and he he makes the house into a cartoon, which is kind of interesting from a production design standpoint. But I don't know, there's something creepier about the original show because it's a farmhouse, which is itself kind of a dull thing that is like got this little monster in it. Whereas in the movie, first of all, the kid has less of a shitty attitude, which I don't like. And also in the movie has this thing that the show doesn't have where this outsider comes in. There's an outsider perspective. There's this woman who's a teacher who's like coming through town and she meets the little boy. She thinks by mistake, but he kind of sets it up.
Yeah. And then like we're basically following her.
Right. Yeah. And when she gets to the house, like she like all of the adults are there acting creepy and they're like, oh, we'll take your coat. And then she goes upstairs. They all like look through her coat and shit. And they're like scavenged. They're like looking for cigarettes and candy. It's just full of oddness. Like they have dinner in that version and the dinner is just like candy and
gumdrops.
Yeah. And donuts and hamburgers with peanut butter on it. And it's like, okay, it's like what a kid would want. It's all just like gross and weird. It's not like you like Anthony in any version, but
they really make him a kid in this one.
Right, right, right. Right. If there is a point, which I think there is a point, I think Rod Serling's bullshitting us. If there is a point, it's about power. It's about this is how a little kid would act if they had supreme power. In the movie, he's a little bit older and he's kind of like you were saying before, it's almost like, oh, he would be a sweet kid if there were sweet people around him. But
assholes. Right, which is the point of them, I guess, bringing in the teacher.
Right.
Because the teacher is the one that's kind of like she doesn't understand it and she kind of wants everyone to just be happy.
Right. And in the end, he sort of wishes everything out of existence except him and the teacher. And she's like, oh, we'll just go around and explore the world, which is kind of how the sequel episode ends as well.
Right.
Which, we'll get into that. It's worth looking at because there's some interesting things in it, you know, the movie version. But I just feel like you can't have it be a scary situation without Anthony being scary.
Right.
And that's what the movie tries to do. Anthony has to be scary. And this little kid, Bill Mummy, who's cute, he's scary. Like, he's got these crazy eyes, and you feel like, just by the way the adults are acting around him, you kind of feel like, wow, like, imagine if you were in this situation.
Right.
Kids are, their whims are so, you know.
Like, how are you going to predict what this kid's going to do next?
Right, right. You know, it's like child celebrities. You know, like if nobody, life has to beat you down a little bit. You have to be told no to become a real person.
Oh, God. That would have been interesting if they had gone with the, like, child celebrity route.
Right. If instead of doing, like, the obvious Trump metaphor, if they made it like Justin Bieber.
Yeah.
And they were like, yeah, everything you do is great. Everything's great. Like, that would have been an interesting take on it. Let's move on to the sequel episode.
Yeah.
So from Twilight Zone 2002.
It's Still a Good Life.
Season one. It's Still a Good Life. Written by Ira Stephen Bear.
Who usually does great things. He's the showrunner for Deep Space Nine.
Oh, is that right?
Yeah. And he wrote a bunch of Next Generation.
Oh, cool. Yeah. All right. So, before I get into what I don't like about it, we'll just explain what it is. So it's the future, right? It begins again with Forrest Whitaker in front of a map. And he's like, hey, this place is still the only place that exists. And this is like 40 years later, which gives me so many questions, but okay. And we're now in the same house, and it's Cloris Leachman is there, and Bill Mummy is an adult now, and he has a daughter, who's played by his real daughter.
Right.
And she's a cute little kid. And in the setup, Forrest Whitaker's like, she doesn't have powers, folks. And then in the first scene, she does something powerful.
Yeah.
And it's like, okay, did you have to make a turn out of that? Like, you could have just told us she has powers. And they're in a tree. Oh, no, the little girl's in a tree with her friend, and she falls out and hurts herself, and Cloris Leachman was like, oh, shit. Dude, don't cry. You don't want daddy to come out.
Yeah.
And then Bill Mummy comes out. He's a grown-ass man now, and he's like, what happened? Did you push my daughter? And Cloris Leachman was like, oh, you know, she's an old hat at this. She's done this her whole life.
Yeah.
She's like, oh, you know how it is, kids, blah, blah, blah. And the little girl,
I was going to say, and then the dad comes by.
Yeah, the dad comes by.
And that's like, oh, that's not good.
Right. And the dad's like, says to Cloris Leachman, like, I told you this wasn't a good idea. And Bill Mummy was like, what wasn't a good idea? You don't want your kid playing with my daughter? I don't like the way you're thinking about me and my family. And pretty brutally, he
sets him on fire.
Right, which is something we heard about in the first episode, but didn't see.
No, now we see it.
And it's brutal because it's
classic, like, guy running away on fire.
Right, but usually when they do that, they slow it down a little bit. They don't do that here. So it just, so he's moving very quickly. It's very creepy. It's like, wow, yeah. this he just set him in fire. And like that man burned.
Yeah.
To death in front of his son. And then he was like, then Bill Mom was like, you better go home to your mom.
Yeah, like fucking burn her alive. Like.
Right. And then it's a scene with Cloris Leachman and the little girl, and they have a nice relationship. And the little girl's like, I'm upset. No one's going to want to play with me now after what daddy did. And she's like, well, you know.
That was good daddy did that.
Yeah, like. Yeah. And then the little girl gets mad and like Carrie, she like breaks a picture frame. Mm-hmm.
And then now all of a sudden Cloris Leachman's like, oh, fuck.
But she sees her opportunity here.
Yeah, because she's like, well, I'm friends with the girl.
Right. She's like, fuck, this is what I've been waiting for.
Yeah.
Yeah, because then she's like, I'm going to keep it a secret. So then they go to the neighbor, which, again, there's a neighbor who looks like a young woman. Where'd she come from? Was she always there? How does the population continue to grow if Peaksville is the only place that exists anymore? Also, the wife is not there. He's just Bill Mummy. He says in one like line, mommy made me mad.
Go away.
And I had to send her to the cornfield.
Yeah.
Which I guess is better because what would that relationship be? It reminds me of like Jessica Jones and the Purple Man.
Yeah.
Like there can't be any idea of consent in that relationship, right?
No, well that's what I was thinking it's too. A like you like so this kid grew up under his own terms.
Yeah.
And then found a wife.
In his
like,
town?
Courted a lady and went on dates. Right. And,
or did he just go, I want to fuck you?
I would do this exactly. Like, did he just, like, do something really unsavory and now he's got a kid?
Yeah, yeah. It's a nightmare. And also, Grandpa's dead.
Yeah, anyone we can't account for, they're just dead or in a cornfield.
Right. And by the way, I have to say, Cloris Leachman is she's doing great. She's the best part of this, I think.
Yeah.
Because she's just such a legend. She's such an old pro. She's so good. I mean, to visit the same role like 40 years later and now be doing it as an older woman and like having all this history that she
and
probably has
got
in her own head.
And she did it.
Right. And she's just an incredible actress. And she's elevating everybody else.
Because it turns out that like, unlike the first episode where there's a lot of setup and then an event that happens and that's the story and that's fine. This kind of does that, but it really peters out. Like there's a lot of interesting stuff in the first 10 minutes.
Right.
Because again, you're setting up like, okay, he's got the daughter and now the daughter has the powers.
Right.
And then, you know, now Cloris Leachman's going to use the daughter to, you know, basically groom her to eventually kill him.
Right. And set everyone free. We also find out the daughter has a power that Anthony doesn't have, which is she can bring things back from the cornfield.
Right.
Whereas Anthony...
Which that's where the ending comes
from. Right. But by the way, again, they get into it a little bit. There's a cool scene where I wanted them to go further where the little girl goes, what is the cornfield? And I was like, awesome, let's do it. Let's get into this. And he doesn't really say what it is. He just is like, yeah, I send things there and they can't come back. But then later on, she's with Cloris Leachman and Cloris Leachman's talking about how she used to have this watch that her husband gave her, but, you know, one time she was mad at Anthony for being late to dinner and he made all watches disappear. And then a little girl just makes the watch come back. And Cloris Leachman was like, oh, shit. Like, you're even more
powerful.
We can undo
this whole fucking thing.
Oh, right. And also, Cloris Leachman was like, you got to think nice thoughts because daddy can read your mind. And she's like, daddy can't read my mind. And she's like, how do you know that? She's like, because I could read his mind and he can't read my mind.
Yeah.
So she's more powerful.
Well, that's the thing. It sets up a lot in the first half. And then it doesn't quite pay it off. Like,
no.
You think there's going to be like a big showdown. And they're like, kind of is.
Well, kind of like in the original one where there was TV night, now there's bowling night.
Right.
And everyone has to come and watch him bowl and be like, wow, you're the best bowler ever. But everything's by candlelight because
there's no electricity.
And this is the thing that drives me crazy. It's 2002. He still doesn't want electricity?
I mean, I guess if you've never had it.
Yeah, I don't know. See, this is what drives me crazy about this episode, which is this. He is Dr. Manhattan. He is God. He's Thanos. His life could be, I live in a castle with nothing but beautiful women who... I live in a farmhouse with my mom. That's my existence as a god. it blows my mind. Like, I feel like if you just said to somebody, hey, remember that episode of Twilight Zone with the kid Anthony, how do you think that kid's life went? There's so many things you can imagine.
Oh, yeah.
But this episode says it's too small. That's what it is. This episode goes, well, let's just keep it in the same house. Let's keep it all in the same basic idea. Let's
literally
idea.
Keep it in the family.
But it's like he's still acting like a kid with that power, not a man with that power. A man with that power would be a god.
He'd have like all the women in the town at his beck and call. Like he would really be an asshole.
He could make his own planet. He could do anything. He wouldn't be living with his mom
in a
shitty old farmhouse.
In an electricless farmhouse,
right? So we forgot to say the mom goes to the neighbor and is like tells her about it. And this is a great moment because it's the first time in both episodes that Clarissa Leachman speaks her mind. And she's like, this is what we've been waiting for. We could finally get rid of that monster I gave birth to.
Yeah.
This is what I've been praying for my whole life. And it's like, great. I love it. You love to see it. But she shouldn't have fucking told that woman because that woman went and gossiped to everyone. And now at the bowling alley, everyone's looking at the little girl. Yeah. The bull mom is like, why aren't they looking at me? I'm the one who's bowling. Why are they looking at her? Because he's a fucking child. And he kind of catches on to something's up. He goes and sees the neighbor and he's like, what were you talking to my mother about? And he gives her the brain scrambies and he finds out that the daughter has powers. And so it's like, fuck, the cat's out of the bag. And he's like, I'm going to hold a town meeting tomorrow in the bowling alley because that's the set we built.
I was going to say, that's the one other set we built for this.
Right. So it's a town meeting in the bowling alley and he decides there's gonna be no one left. I'm gonna put everyone into the cornfield. And everyone's freaking out. He's like, he's like picking children. It's horrifying. And this is the big moment that's like, this is what I paid for. Cloris Leachman finally loses it and it's fantastic. She's like, stop it. I forget how she starts it, but he's like, don't you love me? And she's like, love you. I despise you. You're a monster.
Audience stands up and applauds. Yeah, like
she's
just laying into her. She's got like 40 years of repressed.
I know. And she's just
feelings.
She's just such a good actress. She's just like, oh, that's the most satisfying thing is seeing Cloris Leachman be like, you are a monster. And she says to him what he says to the neighbor in the original episode. She says, you're a very bad man. You're the worst man. And then she gets a little girl. And she's like, all right, wish daddy away. Come on.
Yeah, well, that's the other thing is that they make it like so I guess formal would be the word, where it's just like there's no pretense of like. Because you think, oh, she's reaming him out, and then the little girl is, like, behind him, and she's going to sneak attack him.
Right.
And it's just, but no, she puts the girl right in front of him.
Right.
Now he can wish her to the cornfield.
Right, right. And, her whole plan, I think, was what Cloris Leachman wanted to do was, like, be her Yoda for a while.
Right.
And, like, really, like, set this all up, and it all, because she told the neighbor, and then the neighbor told everybody, it all got out of, everything just got fucked up. So then the little girl's like, I'm not going to do it. And Cloris Leachman's like, fuck. And then she sends Cloris Leachman into the cornfield. Because you're like, okay, the little girl's going to be evil now. Yeah. And this is kind of like, I get how it makes sense. I get it.
They kind of have their cake and eat it too.
It makes sense, but it's also like, did you have to? Like, it just feels like you don't want to do something. You could have, I don't know, you could have reset the clock and done something really interesting here. You know, but instead you were like, no, this is a Twilight Zone. We have to have a downer ending. So guess what? The little girl also sucks. It's because the girl all of a sudden is like, that's my daddy. And it's like, she's shown no care for her father at all.
And now all of a sudden they're like, let's go to New York. Like, let's.
Oh, right, right. Well, he goes crazy and he wishes everybody out of existence. So it's literally just him and his daughter. And at the end, they're playing piano. And she's like, what's the matter, daddy? He's like, I'm kind of lonely. There's no one else in the world. And she's like, I'll fix that. And then she like blinks all of the world back into existence.
Yeah, so now it's just back.
And he sees a plane overhead and he's like, what the fuck is that? And she's like, everything's back, daddy. I brought back everything. I guess except grandma.
Right, we don't see grandma.
She's like, the electricity's back, trains are back. Let's travel. Let's go to New York. And he's like, I've never been to New York. And she's like, oh, let's go.
People like us there? Like, well, if they don't, you know what's going to happen.
Right, that's what she says. It's like, you little shit. But It seems like from, and then there's also like people traveling through and they're like, hey, can you tell us how to get back on the highway? And it's like, but why are they 2002 people? Shouldn't they be like 1959 people?
Well, I guess the idea is that only Peeksville was sent back to, it was like frozen in time. I guess like the rest of the world still went on.
Yeah, I don't know. What do you think?
Flawed. Like there's good moments there. Like the opening where he sets the guy on fire is great.
Yes.
And then when they're in the bowling alley, he's like, what about you? Huh? You want to go first? You want to go in the cornfield?
Right.
And then like she unloads on him. Like, that's great. But yeah. Then there's no real like resolution. Like you're looking for something.
Right.
Where it's like, okay, like what happens to them?
Right. It's sort of like set up, done.
Yeah.
And the setup is all interesting stuff. And you're like, okay, this could really go somewhere. I mean, maybe it was a time constraint. Maybe it was a money constraint. I'm sure they didn't have a lot of money to do the 2002 fucking
yeah.
Twilight Zone reboot. You know, whatever.
All went to Forrest Whitaker.
Right. Cloris Leachman, just to get her out of the driveway. But I don't know. Even within what they had, would you live in a shitty farmhouse? If I could afford paint, I wouldn't live in a shitty farmhouse. I would paint it nice. Like,
well, they bring up an interesting concept at the end, which is, yeah, what if he like went away from Peeksville and like
traveled,
went to a big city, like tried to get a real job, and like
maybe he won't be a piece of shit.
Yeah, or like just the idea that like, okay, he's lived with himself up to the point where he's a man. And he's like, he's kind of getting sick of his own shit.
Right.
Where he's like, yeah, I'm lonely. I'm kind of like, I've sent everyone to the cornfield. Like, maybe this was not the best way right. I should have been living my life. And he tries to earnestly,
right,
like, get a job. Like, he gets scenes of him in office getting upset at people and, like, almost saying that
right,
to a cornfield.
Right.
Like,
yeah. So it would be nice if they did a third one.
Yeah.
Because he also wasn't going to send his mother away. Even though she was telling him off, she was the closest person to him. Like, yeah. At one point, the little girl's like, don't hurt grandma. And he's like, I would never hurt grandma.
Yeah.
So maybe what Cloris Leachman said affected him. And maybe he will try to be better.
Maybe. Bill Mummy's still alive. We could get a third.
Isn't it interesting how much it's like the end of the movie version of the story, of the original story?
Yeah, where the teacher takes him away.
It's like, yeah, let's travel. It's the same exact thing, really. It's like, now you've got a companion, and now let's travel and see the world, and maybe you'll be less of a little shit.
Maybe you won't send everyone to a fucking cornfield.
Yeah. You know, I don't want to just disparage someone who works hard, but I don't think Bill Mummy is... I think he's fine, and he was a great kid actor, but I think I don't think he has the chops totally in the second one. You know, he's doing an okay job. It's nice that it's him. You can tell clearly that's the same guy as the kid. But at the same time, it's like, if this were a really good actor who go toe-to-toe with Cloris Leachman, wouldn't the whole thing work more?
Yeah.
Like...
But again, I think it's a matter of they couldn't get that person.
Right.
And they were like, you know what? We can get the original kid, and that's novel.
Right. Yeah. That, I mean, that is the most novel thing, where it's like, we got it. Everyone original that we could get, we got.
Yeah. They're just lucky that Bill Mummy was, like, is an actual actor, at least.
Right.
Like, he's been working his entire life. It wasn't just like, oh, there was this kid in the Twilight Zone, and then, like, that was his last acting credit.
Right. He was on however many seasons there were of Lost in Space, and he did other things as well. He has a cameo in the movie. He's in the movie when the teacher goes to, like, a diner, and she's, like, looking for directions. And Dick Miller is the guy who runs the diner, because it's a Joe Dante movie, so Dick Miller's got to be in it. That's Mr. Futterman. Anyway, they're in a diner, and Anthony's there, and Anthony's, like, playing a video game, and these truckers are, like, picking on him, which is because, like, don't you know he's Anthony? Don't you know he has powers? But anyway, one of the adults in the diner is Bill Mummy. Yeah, it's interesting. It's certainly interesting. I mean, it's, you know, we live in this world now of Lego sequels. Right? Of like, here's the fourth Matrix, here's a new Star Wars, here's a Ghostbusters. This is 20 years ago almost, but it's got a little bit of that vibe of, hey, we got Cloris Leachman, everybody. Like, hey, you know this story that you probably know because it's famous enough to be a meme? We're doing a sequel to that. Hey, what do you know, that 2001 show also did remakes. They remade, 2002. That 2002 version of Twilight Zone also did a remake of the episode, The Monsters. The Monsters
I Lectured You on Maple Street.
Right. And they changed the ending a little bit, but the script was exactly the same.
Huh.
Isn't this interesting that they decided to sequelize it rather than remake it? Because remake seems like the more, I don't know, safe move?
I think they just wanted to, like, do something wild and different. Because they were like, I guess this has been a while since they had tried a Twilight Zone show.
Right, right.
And they needed some kind of hook. Because this was, like, the original series was what, CBS?
Yes.
Something like that. Then it was still on CBS in the 80s.
Yeah.
That was the 80s one. But then when you get to 2002, this one was on syndication. So it was mostly on UPN.
Yeah.
Yeah. So it's like a big step down.
Right, right, right.
So they need like something. So they had like a couple episodes that they remade and then did the sequel episode to, I think specifically to like court some people into watching.
Maybe people, the original fans, like, hey, if you like that.
But I think also like, can we talk about Forrest Whitaker for a second?
Please.
I've been trying to think of the words, but like, I don't think he's doing a great job.
As the narrator?
As the narrator. I think he tries to bring a certain kind of presence, and it comes off more like a dad at a barbecue. he comes off less Rod Serling and more like, hey, the hot dogs are almost done. Just let you know. Like,
he's more jovial.
He's very jovial.
But what do you prefer, that or Jordan Peele cringingly trying to like do a Rod Serling impression? Because what Jordan Peele is doing is like easy. Come on, guy.
Yeah.
He's like doing a full on impression. And it's like, bro, it's like, I've seen like, you in sketch comedy. Like, right, what are like, you doing? Right,
like, cool the fuck down here. Like,
right.
I prefer the 80s where they just had some nobody with a good voice.
Right, right.
And just they narrated over the first like 20 seconds of the episode.
Right, right. Because what Rod Serling had was a very specific gravitas, which made him, you know, a presence. He's more than the narrator. He's like the god of this world.
Right.
And he speaks in an interesting way, and he talks in it, and, you know, his voice is interesting, and he looks sleek and interesting. You almost feel like he's like a G-Man or something, because he's got this very sharp suit.
Yeah.
And it's like, who's this weird guy who's inviting us into this weird world? You can't replicate that, really. You know, you've got Jordan Peele in the really nice suits. Forrest Whitaker, I don't remember what he's wearing.
He's wearing like 2.5 men shirts.
Yeah, I don't know. It makes you go, why even do the narrator?
Yeah.
Well, let me ask you a big question that we might not get an answer to in this episode. They've not made Lightning Strike twice. They keep trying it, and I'm sure they'll try it again. And there have also been attempts that didn't go anywhere. Between the 80s one or between the 2002 one and the one from 2019.
Right.
I think there was a,
Didn't
M. Night Shyamalan try to do one?
M. Night Shyamalan tried to do
one. There was going to be a series of movies, right? There was going to be a different story each.
Yeah.
That never happened. Why do you think it doesn't work? Why do you think it's not working?
I think for a long time, anthology productions were just like out of fashion.
Right. Right.
And now with streaming, you could do it because it's the type of thing where it's advantageous. Because it's like, hey, we can get big stars for a week or two to come and do to come and do this.
So maybe if it weren't on CBS All Access and were on something like Netflix, it would have done better.
I think it would have done. Honestly, I think it would have done better if it was on Netflix. And if they had just not committed to like a running time for each episode. If they would have said like some episodes might be 22 minutes, some minutes might be an hour. Like we could do what we want. Because really like Black Mirror has taken the place.
Yeah.
That's the contemporary Twilight Zone.
Yeah, exactly.
And Black Mirror certifiably just does whatever it wants. They're like, we'll do, we'll do 6 episodes that are an hour. We'll do, you know, 1 episode that's a fucking choose your own adventure story on Netflix.
Right. And you know, when you remake The Twilight Zone, it's so weird because it's like that's an anthology series and you're doing an anthology series. And besides remaking some of the episodes, which we've seen they have done, how do you remake a vibe? How do you remake a feeling? Because it's not even an aesthetic. It's not even a visual aesthetic. I mean, if it was, they would do it in black and white, which no one has done. It's like there's a feeling of the Twilight Zone, and like that's what they're trying to capture. It's almost impossible. Yeah, maybe it would have been better somewhere else. You know, I feel like the Jordan Peele Twilight Zone is like Star Trek Discovery. It's like there are three kinds of people. There's people that don't care. There's the people that care and watch it, which is a very small amount. And then there's a bunch of people that are like, oh, I want to watch that. Where can I see it? Oh, I guess I won't then.
Yeah.
And that's a big thing. Because
to be fair, ever since they changed to Paramount Plus, I feel like
it's more accessible.
Because CBS All Access sounds like, honestly, like everything's in the wording. CBS All Access sounds like it's more like a bonus thing.
Right. Well, CBS
like
is
CBS, then you got CBS All Access. Whereas Paramount Plus is like, oh, Paramount Plus, Disney Plus. I get it.
Right. It's the plus thing. It's exactly the plus thing. Also, Paramount is a film studio, and CBS is a TV network. So you feel like
you're getting more.
Right. You feel like TV. I don't want more broadcast TV. I don't like TV.
Or even just like I'm going to pay. Is it just CBS? Is it just Paramount Plus is like, okay, so I'm getting like, you know, Paramount Comedy movies. Central, I'm getting, you know, this, that, and the other thing. Like,
right. Well, all right, let's talk a little bit before we close up about Wunderkind. Wunderkind is from this Jordan Peele series. It is from season 1, episode 5, written by Andrew Guest, directed by Richard Shepard. So it's John Cho from the now defunct live action remake of Cowboy Bebop.
Yeah.
Which I didn't see, but I don't know. Could it be as bad as they all say?
I don't know. They canceled that real quick.
I know.
That was almost like they were just waiting for it to air.
Right.
And they knew they were going to cancel it.
Yeah. And for Netflix to come out and be like, we're canceling it, is like, you don't even have to do that. Like, they almost like were assuring us that they canceled it.
Right. Like, oh, don't worry. Don't worry.
It's not coming back.
Yeah.
So John Cho plays Raff Hanks, who's like, his thing is like, he's a young political go-getter, and he runs campaigns. He's sort of, in the beginning, he's sort of washed up, and he's sort of like, he ran a presidential campaign with John Larroquette, who lost. And he's like, now he's like, I'm just gonna sit in a bar and be an alcoholic. And then I guess an old partner comes to him and is like, have you seen this kid? I think the kid is supposed to be like Justin Bieber, because he's like a young, cute kid, and he's like singing. His videos are like, I think, him singing.
Yeah, they're just like typical like YouTube, hey, I discovered this kid on YouTube kind of videos.
Yeah, and it's Tremblay from The Room and from Wonder and Dr. Sleep. He's like, he's Oliver. And, you know, and John Cho goes to his family and is like, listen, you know, he can't run for president because he's not 35, but mom, you run. But really, he'll be running. And he basically, I got to say, there are some things about it I like when it comes to the Trump stuff. Because he basically says, like, this is a big joke. We'll get rich off of it, but he can't really be president. No one will ever really vote for him. That would be ridiculous.
Right. So therefore, we're just going to use this to get rich.
Right. But then,
almost like when Trump first ran, it was thought of as like, oh, because when he announced, The Apprentice was still on the air. People forget. And people thought, like, oh, this is just going to be a way for him to, like, gas up the ratings.
Right.
For The Apprentice.
Well, who was it? Michael Moore has that theory that the reason Trump became president all stemmed from NBC? NBC coming out and saying that they're paying Gwen Stefani more than Trump to be on The Voice. And that pissed Trump off.
Yeah.
So then he's like, I'm going to run for president. And then that happened. So, but you know what? This episode's like 45 minutes, but it could be tighter.
It
kind of meanders in the middle. So, you know, this kid's starting to act shitty, and John Cho's like kind of laughing it off, and everyone's kind of laughing it off. Okay, this kid's being a prima donna. John Cho, the kid fucks up a debate, which is pretty funny, and so they're like, okay, this is it, it's over.
That's my favorite scene, the bake, and it's like, it's exactly what you would expect it to be.
Right, it's hilariously realistic. The kid's like, I don't know, mom! Like,
what do you think about tort reform? It's like, I don't know.
But then the kid is like, he does a video about his dying dog, and he's like, my dog's dying.
And that wins the heart of a nation.
And he gets elected. And later on, we find out the kid's like, my dog was never really dying.
Yeah,
it's like, this little kid's a fucking psycho.
Yeah.
So he becomes president, and You know, his first day at the office, he's like, I want to do this. And they're like, well, you can't do that. Congress isn't going to. Well, he's like, I want everyone to get free video games. And they're like, well, sir, video game companies are not going to give that product away for free. And he's like, well, if they don't want some tariffs on their shit, then they will. And it's like, they're like, okay. And it's like, he's got that Trump thing that you heard about, which is.
He like, thinks well, why can't king. We make it happen?
Right, you're right.
Like, why? Well, I'll make it happen.
Right. I want it to happen. Make it happen. Why are you not making it happen? And everybody's just on board. And then John Cho is like, tries to talk to his mother and is like, this is fucking crazy. Like, this has gone far enough. He's like, you're the president. Why don't you take over? And she's like, no. And then he tries to talk to some like general. And the general's like, you sound treasonous.
Yeah.
And he's like, no. I don't mean that.
Like, it's funny that the generals are just all on board. Like,
I know. Which is not true for what happened with Trump. Right,
exactly.
Right. And, oh, God. I don't want to get into the whole thing, but basically the wraparound story is that he's, like, in an operating table.
And then there's a kid doctor.
Right, because at some point he's like, I don't want old people doctors. I want kid doctors. And it's a little...
And everyone agreed with
it. It's a little sweaty. I like the idea of using children as a metaphor for thoughtless people.
Yeah.
But
the second you make it a big Trump analogy.
Right. Exactly. It's almost too perfect. Like, you watch it and you've got that, like, you know, Clapter. You know, yeah. You're like, oh, you did it. Oh, I get it. Oh, I see. Oh, it's just like he did.
It's like it's several reviews I looked up equate it to, like, how stale a lot of late-night TV has gotten.
Right,
in
right.
The Trump era, where it's like, you know, it's like a weird vacuum where it's like, okay, we have to talk about this guy.
Right.
Because he's the president. But how many times can we tell the same Trump joke?
Right.
Like, it's not a joke anymore.
It's so like, on the nose. Right, it's like, so even now, on the nose.
Like, even now, and some late night shows, I guess, are getting away from this now that we're out of the Trump era. Right. But Seth Meyers, for example, still talks about Trump, like, every day.
Yeah.
And it's like... Come on. Like, I'm a stone cold liberal and, like, I don't want to hear this shit every night.
Right. Yeah. It you know, there was this whole thing also about, like, can satire be useful in a world that's so silly and ridiculous? And I don't know. Maybe it can't. I don't know. It's also preaching to the choir, because it's like, I don't know, if you're watching The Twilight Zone, and right. Not to say that conservative people don't like The Twilight Zone, but it just felt like, who is this for? You're not changing anybody's mind.
If you're smart enough to know how ridiculous everything around you is,
right?
You're not watching this going like, oh, can you believe they're making this point about this? Yeah, Trump is a kid. I never thought about it.
Right. Like, right, exactly. If you're like a Trump supporter, are you really going to watch this and be like, oh, I see. You know, he is kind of like a child.
And they even go so far as to, like, give him the same kind of hairstyle and like.
Yeah. And it all goes a little too long.
Well, that's been the problem with the whole Jordan Peele Twilight Zone. Mm. It's like every episode feels like it's a half hour too long.
How many have you seen?
Not a lot. I watched like a handful.
I've only seen two, and neither really did it for me. I saw the pilot with Kumail Nanjiani, which I felt had a lot of narrative problems. I mean, not that you need something like this to make sense, but it really made no fucking sense. And this was better written, but it was also like. I don't know.
Yeah, there was an interesting one I saw where someone's on a plane. It's their take on the gremlins on the side of the plane.
Okay.
Where there's a guy and he's on a plane and he's listening to a podcast. And the podcast is about, I don't know why he'd be listening to this podcast, but he's listening to a podcast about like disasters.
Okay.
And he's listening to one about like a plane disaster. And he slowly realizes that the podcast is about the plane he's on right now.
Oh. See, isn't this interesting, though? Because, again, it shows that you have to derive from the original.
Right.
This is, I mean...
Because, like, that's a good idea, but I don't know if you needed it to be a direct correlation to the Gremlin one.
Taking these original episodes and remixing them is, I think, a better idea than just, like, making a sequel of it, like they did in the 2002 one with It's Still a Good Life. But at the same time, I don't know. It just, and I know I did a whole episode about how I love Ghostbusters Afterlife. So, but it is like.
But it's like if you have an original enough. Tale. But it's like if you have an original enough idea already, because the idea of listening to a podcast and the podcast you're listening to is about a disaster that you're about to experience. Like, that's kind of a fresh idea.
Right.
Like, why waste it
right.
trying to squeeze it into, like, a remake of the Gremlins?
Well, the question ends up being, if you've got good stories for an anthology, why does it need to be The Twilight Zone?
Right.
We've done extensive coverage on this podcast of Love, Death, and Robots. I love Love, Death, and Robots. Have you ever watched any of that?
No.
Great Netflix series. So Love, Death, and Robots began as a modern-day version of heavy metal.
Okay.
And that's how they developed it. But then they got to a point where it was like, you know what? Fuck it.
Why
does
our own thing.
Yeah, why does this have to be heavy metal? Like, this will be our thing. And I'm so glad they did their own thing.
Yeah.
Calling something Twilight Zone, all that could do is give you really crazy expectations.
Yeah.
And not even expectations for certain characters or certain stories, but for a certain revelatory feeling. You're going to get a feeling at the end of this that's going to blow your mind. And it's why every M. Night Shyamalan movie sucks.
Right, because like, people call him, like, oh, you know, the master of mystery or whatever.
Right, right. It's like, okay, this is... of all the things we talked about today, what would you recommend?
I mean, I definitely recommend seeing the original. I mean, that's a classic.
Yeah.
And then I would recommend, it's for free on YouTube, that's where I watched it, the sequel episode. Mm. Because there are good scenes in it. Like, yeah. I think it's worth a watch.
I'll recommend the original show, and I'll go ahead and actually recommend the movie. I like the movie.
Okay.
One day, we'll got to talk about the movie in greater depth. Look, there was a tragedy that happened in the production of the movie, and that's crazy. But I think the movie has a lot of charms.
Yeah.
It's got one of the scariest openings ever, actually.
Oh, that opening used to scare the crap out of me.
That's such a great jump scare.
It really is.
Wow. Vin, thank you so much for coming over here on the last day of the year and recording with me on this day.
We gotta watch the ball drop now.
Oh.
We gotta watch Ryan Seacrest, Dick Clark's New Year's Rockin' Eve.
Right. Happy New Year. We wish everybody a great 2022. We end every episode by saying,
go bye-bye.